Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We are on the road in our mobile studio, a little more presentable than yesterday's program, I'm pleased to say, and the better for having an opportunity to visit with our resident genius who makes us all look and sound better, that's for sure. His name is George Raceley. He comes by that moniker, honestly. He is a member of the Mensa Society, and as you see each time he appears, he is brilliant, and we're always delighted to be able to catch up with him. George brings a wealth of experience to the program, particularly in, well, what I think of as political warfare. He has served on campaigns, some 300 of them, including at the presidential level. He has been an aide to the Vice President of the United States. He's served on Capitol Hill. He knows his way around the mundo politico. And we're going to talk about it with him at the moment. George Raceley, good to have you with us. Let me just also say, he is the editor-in-chief of a marvelous online publication by Richard Viguerie entitled The Conservative HQ. And George, I know you've got a very important piece out today on the border. So we want to start with that, but a proper hello first.
Well, thank you, Frank. And it's always a pleasure to be on with you. And I noted your piece, D-Day for America, and it certainly is an invasion at the southern border, but unfortunately, it's not the good guys that are landing on the beach this time. And it's really, it's hard to overemphasize how bad it is. I mean, literally, the southern border has fallen.
Carry on. There seems to be a bit of a lag.
No, I mean, there have been hundreds of terrorist-affiliated, narco-trafficker-affiliated crossings that we've caught. We don't know what we don't know. So the getaways, as they call them, could be in the thousands.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe millions.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. It's hard to overemphasize.
Yeah. George, one of the things that we talked about in that commentary you mentioned, and by the way, people can subscribe to these at securefreedom.org, and I hope you will. Every day we do a minute commentary, and this one, I think, is, as George said, particularly topical, because we did, George, and you are a member of our committee on the present danger of China, a very important webinar, we did a very important webinar on Tuesday of this week, which can be seen at presentdangerchina.org, and it lays out the evidence that among those coming across the southern border are members of the Chinese People's Liberation Army, or maybe the Chinese intelligence services, some number of personnel that almost certainly are coming here for very malevolent purposes. Talk a little bit about that particular danger as you see it, George.
Well, one of the striking features of this current invasion is that these are not the family migrants that, MSNBC shows you to, tear at your heartstrings, poor people from some other part of the world looking for a job, or should I say looking to take away a job from an American. But these are all young military-aged men, pardon me, and they're from Red China, they're from Yemen, they're from practically every country that hates us and wants to destroy America. There are thousands of Venezuelans on their way right now, and we know this because the president of Guatemala told a member of Congress.
Yeah, they're inbound.
And the member of Congress called the White House and couldn't get a call back.
Yeah, don't bother us with the facts, I think, has generally been the view. Now, George, again, exactly. You've spent a lot of time in official Washington. You've observed closely how it conducts itself. One of the things that one cannot miss in all of this is well, not just the assurances that are being pushed out by the administration spokesman that there's nothing to see here, folks, or at least nothing to worry about, because they're now tightening up procedures with respect to people seeking asylum at the moment that they're lifting this so-called Title 42 arrangement, which gives rise to the D-Day, as I see it here in America, that's coming. But George, I just wanted to ask you, they're also telling us that the border is completely secure.
Yeah, and that's utter nonsense. And what they've done is essentially changed the rules so that, in effect, if the bank robber asks you for the money and you give it to him, then it's not robbery.
I see.
And so, in essence, all they're doing is simply changing the paperwork necessary to allow these people in a semi-legal way. I say semi-legal because it's unclear that the president or any organ of government has the authority to do that. But it remains to be seen whether it'll be challenged and whether the challengers will be allowed to have standing to do so.
But in the meantime, George, the problem is the border is now open. Whatever the paperwork is and so on, if people rush it and come on in, whatever the court processes might ultimately, reveal about the legality of what they're doing at the administrative level, those folks are invading our country. And as you say, George, large numbers of them, I don't know if it's a majority or just a significant and sufficient minority, are jihadists and or, People's Liberation Army threats. And it can't be ignored, can it?
It absolutely cannot be ignored. And, the astonishing thing about this is that there's a conspiracy of silence with the major establishment media. I mean, in my article I posted today, I've got, clips from the coverage of ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, and you would think this is just a normal day in paradise down at the border if all you watch is, the legacy networks. And so the only way that Americans are going to see this for what it is if, we get the word out through your program, through our website and newsletter, and the people forward it to their friends and church members and club members and family, because they're not going to get it from the legacy media.
Yeah, and not perhaps from official sources either, including, one must say, some Republicans, but certainly the administration itself. George, we're going to have to take a break here in just a moment, but I did want to say, speaking of your elected representatives, while they've not done much about the border, alas. Most Republicans, let's face it, are critical of what's being done here, but not interposing the kinds of impediments. Even the governors of those border states are not doing much in the effort to stop the invasion that's underway. But I think we do want to talk a little bit about some good news. Well, good news at least in that we're seeing Republicans stepping up and addressing at last some of the things that have driven us all crazy about what the administration's been up to and been getting away with, notably Joe Biden and his, his capture by the Chinese Communist Party. We're going to take that break. George Raceley is in the house, I'm pleased to say. On the other side of it, we'll talk about what James Comer and others have been revealing and what it means for all of us that finally we're getting to the bottom of it. Be right back with more with George Raceley right after this. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The invasion of America by illegal aliens will enter a new and possibly decisive phase today as the Biden administration removes a public health policy that kept some out. Think of it as D-Day here. Of course, Team Biden insists there will be no problem. The technical term for that is lying. The truth is, as a chilling Committee on the Present Danger China webinar on Tuesday made clear, Biden's effective elimination of the U.S. southern border and his failure to secure our northern one is going to get at least some of us killed. That's because young men who may well be Chinese military personnel are among those exploiting this situation in large numbers. We argue in our new bestseller, The Indictment, that American elites captured by the Chinese Communist Party must be removed from leadership positions. Clearly, Joe must go. This is Frank Affney. Welcome back. George Raceley is in the house. We're talking with the editor-in-chief of the marvelous Richard Viguerie's Conservative HQ newsletter. And I want to just put in a plug for George because he gave a very favorable review to our new book, which happens to be, thanks to all of you, among others, a bestseller on Amazon in not one, not two, but three categories, if you can imagine it. Please, if you haven't already done so, check it out for all the reasons George Raceley has talked about in a really wonderful piece that he wrote at Conservative HQ. George, enough about you. How'd you like my new book? No, I'm just kidding. Let's talk about what the Congress is doing and how you like it. James Comer, the chairman of the Oversight Committee, is among those who have now begun mustering out to show that having Republicans in charge of the Congress can make a difference, specifically with respect to what are the facts with respect to the betrayal of our country that we document in the book, The Indictment, by the way. Give us your read on what we now know that we didn't and what looks like it's coming from all of it.
Well, Chairman Comer has been doing a fantastic job, and Yesterday, he and members of the Oversight Committee, including my wonderful Congressman Byron Donalds, conducted a press conference that was just fabulous in laying out the Biden crime family's series of shell corporations, structured transfers to avoid $10,000 reporting level. And I mean, this is classic money laundering behavior. If this was a guy whose name was Hispanic or Italian, this would be indictable tomorrow. But because well, the Democratic
Party...
In fact,
it should
Party,
be indictable for anybody, notwithstanding
well, yeah.
that. But Joe Biden is above the law? Is that the idea, we think?
Well, the Democratic Party is basically turned into a witness protection program for the Clintons and the Bidens. And the stuff that Paul Manafort was sent to prison for was laid out by James Comer in perfect detail. And, if this was anybody but a Biden or a Clinton, the FBI would have been perp walking them with a SWAT team at 5 o'clock in the morning.
But instead, as you say, they're protecting these guys, the FBI, the Justice Department, and it's not the witnesses that are being protected, it's the the perpetrators of what appear to be crimes of various kinds.
Yeah.
And George, what have we learned specifically about the thing that I'm particularly concerned about, namely the compromise, or more to the point, the capture of Joe Biden and his family by the Chinese Communist Party?
Well, yeah. I mean, the financial transactions in the multi-millions of dollars that were run through these shell companies for the most part. But one that was really amazing was that Hunter Biden got a multi-million dollar pot of money directly from a guy who's associated with communist Chinese intelligence. And you know what everybody's got to understand is that nothing happens in Red China without the approval of the People's Liberation Army, the Communist Chinese Party. And so none of this stuff is a free market transaction. There's always a political, military goal. And of course, the goal in this case is to capture the President of the United States, and they've done it.
Well, look, the goal, to be more precise, is to capture him for the purpose of helping the Chinese Communist Party destroy our country. And that's the thing that's so worrying. And I hope James Comer and others will be laying out in the kind of detail that, frankly, we have in the indictment that you need to know, folks. The government under Joe Biden, and it's mostly in the executive branch, but some in the legislative branch, and certainly throughout the rest of our elites and the business sector, finance, media, the academics, and so on. All of these folks have been put in the service of the Chinese Communist Party. So it's, as you say, not just a business transaction. This is betrayal of our country, is it not?
It absolutely is, Frank, and you've laid it out there very well and documented it well in the book. And again, it's the goal of the Chinese Communist Party to destroy the United States. And so, our friends out in the public who think, well, the Chinese are competitors. No, they're not competitors. They're enemies that want to destroy us. And we have to confront them as enemies with the knowledge that if we don't destroy them, they're going to destroy us.
This is exactly the leitmotif of the book, including our 20 action steps as to how we go about defeating them so they don't succeed in destroying us. George, a last set of questions before we let you go. In addition to these investigations beginning to bear fruit, the Republican Congress has laid out an alternative approach to the blank check that Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer in the Senate are seeking in exchange for just raising the debt ceiling so that we can print more money with all kinds of negative effects, including for the currency of the United States, the reserve status of that currency. Give us a read on where the negotiations seem to be standing at the moment and where we go from here.
Joe Biden said he wasn't going to negotiate, but in fact, he is having Kevin McCarthy to the White House. I believe it's tomorrow. And the good news is
Well, he had him
for
earlier in the week. He's coming back, I think, for more, right?
and coming back. The good news is that 43 of the Senate Republicans have now signed on to what in essence is the House program, even Mitch McConnell. And so while we're missing a few Senate Republicans, the usual suspects, Susan Collins, Mitt Romney, et cetera, but the unity of Republicans to stand against a blank check is crucial because, with 40 plus Republicans in the Senate, they can sustain a filibuster. And so the Senate can't use reconciliation or anything like that with the House united against the blank check. So this is all good. The plan that McCarthy passed in the House is good, solid stuff that Republicans have been for years. How much of that survives the negotiation process remains to be seen. But so far, probably the best thing to come out of it is a unified GOP on Capitol Hill.
Yeah. And that does mean, perhaps at a minimum, the contrast being presented to the American people between the two parties, people who are trying to be responsible, trying to exercise some discipline on wanton spending, trying to, well, defund, among other things, some of these lunatic America devastating energy initiatives of the Biden administration. I hope that contrast will be continued to be sharply in focus and that the American people will respond appropriately. George Raceley, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Thank you for your excellent service to our country, especially that you're rendering these days at Conservative HQ. We always appreciate your visits. Come back to us again very soon.
Thank you for all you do, Frank.
We'll be right back with more. Stay tuned.
In cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, and I'm very pleased to say we are joined for the first time by a man that I have been admiring from afar for quite a while. His name is Kenneth Raposa. He has been, among other things, a journalist covering emerging markets around the world with a special focus, appropriately, on communist China. He writes for Forbes magazine, and he is also an industry analyst for a terrific group, the Coalition for a Prosperous America, with whom we are proud to partner on any number of things, most especially trying to prevent the United States financial sector from underwriting and thereby enabling the threat we face from the Chinese Communist Party. It is, of course, the subject of, did I mention this earlier? Our new book, The Indictment, and we are very anxious to talk with Ken about what he's seeing happening in China that makes, if anything, it even more compelling that we stop putting your money, by the way, your pension funds, your mutual funds, your 401k plans, what have you, into the maw of the Chinese Communist Party, especially at a moment when they may well go to war with us, the old-fashioned kind, a shooting war, and write off completely any money that we've given them. Ken, it's good to have you with us, sir. Welcome once again to the program, and I'm very anxious to talk with you.
Thanks, Samuel. I appreciate it.
So you've written recently about economic turmoil inside China. Would you talk about what you're seeing there and particularly put it into the context that I just laid out, that is this a good place to have your money?
Well, let's talk about the capital market sanctions that you brought up in the beginning. So most of the companies, there's about, if I remember correctly, there's about 60 companies that have been banned from the United States Wall Street from investing in China. Most of these are tied to the Chinese defense establishment, the defense contractors for the Chinese government. But there are a few that have been sanctioned for human rights violations, namely through the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. There's a bunch of companies listed on there who are banned. You can't buy their product. You can't do business with them. And one of them in particular that comes out is a company called Hoshine Silicon Industries. And they're publicly traded you can invest in them. And in fact, to this day, Vanguard and BlackRock are huge holders of them. So if you own the iShares Emerging Market ETF or a Vanguard International Fund, you are invested in Hoshine, which according to the US government, you are not allowed to do business with if you're importing things like solar panels that are made from Hoshine materials. They make polysilicon that eventually gets turned into solar cells that get plugged into your solar panels. And that's all in Xinjiang. So that's one example of what you were talking about earlier, how the United States, they have all these restrictions on what you can invest in China, but there's so many holes that, you know, we are clearly investing in many companies that the United States government says should be off limits, and Wall Street is still putting money there.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it kind of makes your head explode. You can't do business with some of these companies for the good reason that they're working for the Chinese People's Liberation Army, building weapons to kill us, for example, or perhaps using slave labor to produce solar panels for your house or what have you, but you can invest your money in the company. That inevitably makes it possible for them to build weapons to kill us or solar panels using slave labor. What's wrong with this picture, Ken?
Well, what's wrong with the picture on the solar side, of course, is you have a huge climate lobby in the United States, led by people like John Kerry, who was recently in China talking about how the two countries need to work together on climate change. And of course, you know, that's true, because many people in the West believe China's on a different planet, that you can go all electric vehicles and ban coal and ban this and ban that. But China could just smoke like a chimney and import, you know, and build more coal plants, and that's fine because China exists, is floating somewhere else in the solar system. So, you know, it's okay. You know, you want to work with China on those issues. But on a company like Hoshine, I'll just use that as a simple example for listeners who've never really heard of these companies, is that, you know, China is our main source of solar, and we're importing product that's made from a company that's banned by the United States, that's banned to do business with them, and they're part of the solar supply chain. Of course, not all Chinese companies are this, not all of them, but enough of them are sourcing from Hoshine that it warrants customs to ban products that have been made from Hoshine goods, and yet you can still invest in them. So I think what we're seeing now on Capitol Hill is a lot of people in Congress are saying, we have to look at these numerous lists that Treasury has, that the Uyghur Forced Labor Law has, and we got to see if those companies are publicly traded in Shanghai or Shenzhen, Hong Kong. If Vanguard and BlackRock are going to put money in there because they buy anything with a ticker symbol on it, that should be off limits. Because if we're banning it here, you can't do business with them. You certainly shouldn't be able to be buying their shares in Shanghai. So we're in that moment now in Capitol Hill. Wheels are in motion there.
Good. Well, praise the Lord. I hope it comes to pass. And thanks for the work your coalition is doing in that regard. Let me just ask you about something you just said. BlackRock, I call it the 800-ton gorilla in the financial sector, and Vanguard and State Street and, you know, these other actors, masters of the universe, as they fancy themselves on Wall Street, are continuing to plow money into China. As you say, they're hoovering up anything with a ticker symbol. Unfortunately, as our friend and colleague Roger Robinson has pointed out, there are a whole bunch of Chinese companies, A-shares they're called, that are only issued in China, but are nonetheless also being hoovered up by these guys and thrown into various index funds and the like. And I suggest that, and my question to you is, am I right that most Americans have no idea their money is being put into these purposes, let alone companies that, for example, are doing business with the people who are trying to kill us?
Right. So the A-shares just means that if you call it A-share, it means your stock is listed only in Shanghai or Shenzhen. Those are the two big stock exchanges in mainland China. And if you're invested in ETFs, like let's say the iShares MSCI China Index, a fund, you're invested in the A-shares. If you're invested in mutual funds like Matthews Asia China Fund or whatever, clearly they have all the stocks in Shanghai and Shenzhen in their portfolio. Most of these companies are probably plain vanilla companies. They're like dairy farms or whatever, pharmaceutical companies. But of course, there's a lot of them that are part of what's called the dual use civilian military companies that work with tech. So it might be a company, let's say the equivalent of like an Apple, for example, in the United States, that they're just making, you know, random phones and a MacBook. Okay, fine. But on the other hand, they're also working with the CIA, let's pretend, right? Or the US government to build a super hologram phone or whatever, or a satellite phone for the government. So that's the same thing in China, of course, right? So you're investing in companies that are clearly working, building technology for the US, for the Chinese military. And so that's one of the biggest problems with Asia. That's going to be really tough to nail down, though. So I think what the US government is going to do first and what should be done, especially for companies in on Wall Street that want to at least not invest in these in bad actor Chinese companies, is if you're on an entity list, if you're on a Treasury sanction list and you're publicly traded, whether it's in Shanghai or New York, you shouldn't be invested in them. Only some bans exist at this time, not full bans, but they shouldn't be invested in. If we can't trade with them, if I can't sell them a widget, if I have to ask permission to sell them a widget to make a Huawei phone, okay, I shouldn't be able to invest in them because something's wrong.
I agree.
If we're saying we can't trade with
them. I think you're right.
I think that's the next step.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I think we need to get at this A-shares problem too, but first things first. Let me just ask you, because I know this is an issue that your colleague and mine, Robbie Smith, has been working on with us, among others. The idea that we're seeing pension funds invested in some of these very, very problematic companies, and fundamentally, let's be clear, in the Chinese Communist Party, Ken, including the pension funds of American military personnel and other government, you know, public servants, both retired as well as currently serving. The idea that those guys and gals are having their personal wealth invested through the international fund of the Thrift Savings Plan or through mutual funds that they may unwittingly be buying through the so-called mutual fund window, that are doing the kind of work you've just talked about. And it's the slave labor, yeah, maybe, but it's also serving in the civil military fusion role, the purposes of the People's Liberation Army and the Chinese Communist Party more generally, which is to destroy this country. I mean, this is intolerable, is it not? And how could it possibly be allowed? Especially since, final point, the people in Congress are among those who are also invested in the Thrift Savings Plan. They've got the same problem, no?
Right. Well, the Thrift Savings Plan, just for your listeners to understand what it is, it's a government pension plan, mostly for government workers, obviously. And then there's a military arm for it as well. So if you're a U.S. general and you're about to retire and you have money, let's say, in an emerging market fund, well, that could be loaded with Chinese. In the past, it was loaded with Chinese military companies, you know, companies that are building warships, for example. You were clearly invested in that. And of course, it's a mutual fund that you own, right? So you don't own like millions of shares. The fund itself does. You might own the equivalent of 5 shares, right? But you're still invested in there. Chinese government probably is not invested in Lockheed Martin. They're probably not invested in Northrop Grumman. But we're investing in China. And this has been China's, role for a long time. China soaks up Western capital. Wall Street loves it. They've been trying to open up that market for years. They see it as their playpen. They see it as a place to make money. And so they do not want any restrictions, of course. You have to force the restrictions down their throat. When you do that, they'll abide. But if you don't, then they'll just invest, like I said, in anything with a ticker, whether it's State Street, Vanguard, BlackRock, those are the big guys. They invest in everything. And so if you don't let them know that, hey, guys, you're investing in bad actors, Chinese bad actors, you got to put up or shut up. Put your money where your mouth is. Don't pretend you're all peace and love and whatever, you know, moral high ground.
Ben,
if you invest in companies, can't do it.
We're out of time. Thank you. God bless you for your work. Keep it up at Forbes and at the Coalition for a Prosperous America. And come back to us with more, please, very soon. God bless you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with more right after this. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The invasion of America by illegal aliens will enter a new and possibly decisive phase today as the Biden administration removes a public health policy that kept some out. Think of it as D-Day here. Of course, Team Biden insists there will be no problem. The technical term for that is lying. The truth is, as a chilling Committee on the Present Danger China webinar on Tuesday made clear, Biden's effective elimination of the U.S. southern border and his failure to secure our northern one is going to get at least some of us killed. That's because young men who may well be Chinese military personnel are among those exploiting this situation in large numbers. We argue in our new bestseller, The Indictment, that American elites captured by the Chinese Communist Party must be removed from leadership positions. Clearly, Joe must go. This is Frank Gaffney. Welcome back, and it's always a very red letter day around here when we have the chance to visit with Robert Spencer, public intellectuals, researchers, analysts, and savants, really, about the challenges that our country faces from Sharia supremacists on the one hand and from the left on the other. He is the director of an incredibly important online resource. It's called jihadwatch.org. It's a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Robert is the author of more books than I can count. It includes, most recently, The Sumter Gambit, about how the left is trying to provoke a civil war again in America. Robert is a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy, a great contributor to this program, and we're always honored to have him with us. Sir, welcome back.
Always good to talk to you, Frank. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's start with an Islamophobia day. Let me do that again. Robert, let's start with the honoring of Islamophobia Day by the White House in the person of Doug Emhoff, the so-called second man of our government. Remind us who he is, first of all, and then tell us about this event and what role he played in it.
Douglas Emhoff is the second lady of the United States. That is, he is the husband of Kamala Harris, the vice president. And so he doesn't actually have any role in government in any official capacity. But the Biden administration being what it is, they found something for him to do. And what he did was he recently held a listening session at the White House on Islamophobia. And instead of having a productive discussion in which maybe you or other people who could speak about how Islamophobia is a term that is used to inhibit and silence any kind of honest analysis of the motives and goals of jihad terrorists, he only had Muslim Brotherhood-linked Sharia supremacists on the premises, including many very notorious individuals from notorious organizations, including the Hamas-linked Council on American-Islamic Relations, the Islamic Society of North America, all the usual suspects.
They rounded them up. And just to calibrate a little bit on this, Robert, Islamophobia is a fraud. Let's start with that. But it's rooted in this premise that literally there is something unreasoned or irrational about fear of Islamists, presumably, especially jihadists. I don't know anybody who studied this more closely, at least outside of the Muslim faith, than you. Is it unreasoned or irrational to be fearful of these Sharia supremacists, if you care to use my term, especially since they are making a point of terrifying us all the time? And that's according to Allah's dictates, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely, Frank. And the Muslim Brotherhood, to which all the people, or virtually all the people that were at the Islamophobia listening session were linked, is dedicated in its own words to eliminating and destroying Western civilization from within, as you yourself have so tirelessly continued to point out. According to a captured internal document, the Muslim Brotherhood internationally is very clearly dedicated to imposing Sharia wherever it can. And so it's perfectly reasonable to be concerned about this, since Sharia denies the freedom of speech, denies the equality of rights of women with men, denies any number of freedoms that we enjoy as Americans. So the thing is, Islamophobia, Frank, is a trick. It's a sleight of hand. It is, in the first place, a fraud. It's they talk about attacks on innocent Muslims. Now, nobody supports attacks on innocent Muslims. And so when you're talking about Islamophobia in that way, then of course everybody should be against Islamophobia. But then in speaking about these attacks on innocent Muslims, they start to say that people who speak honestly about the jihad threat have to be silenced because these supposedly lead to these attacks. That kind of talk supposedly leads to these kinds of attacks on innocent Muslims. Now, that connection has never been established. And what they're really trying to do is silence criticism of jihad violence and Sharia, which will allow jihad violence and Sharia to spread.
Right. And that is the mission, of course, of jihadis and of Sharia, which is the Islamic doctrine or code and the operating system, you might say. Now, Robert, just to come back to this event, is it fair to say that this was not just a one-off event, a meeting, a assemblage of these individuals in the company of senior U.S. government personnel, even if they're performing sort of in an informal way, official duties like Doug Emhoff? Is it the case, I guess let me put a fine point on it, that the Muslim Brotherhood is actually inside the wire of this administration and has been going back to when Joe Biden promised to do exactly that on the campaign trail?
Yeah, absolutely. All these people, as I noted, are linked to the Muslim Brotherhood, or many of them in any case. And it's also very important to note that last year, Ilhan Omar, the representative from Minnesota, introduced a bill that would establish a special envoy to monitor Islamophobia within the State Department. And this was a bill that was passed by the House of Representatives and then never voted on in the Senate. And so it should have died at that point. But Biden recently announced that he had appointed just such an envoy. And so despite the fact, or heedless, indifferent to the fact that this bill was actually not passed and should not have become law, Biden is acting as if it is law and is now making it a part of the government's responsibilities to track, monitor, and try to stamp out Islamophobia, which all too often means honest analysis of the jihad threat.
Yeah. Now, this is part of the effort to establish moral equivalence, I think it's fair to say, between those who are rightly concerned about the practice of anti-Semitism and those who are professing to be concerned about this Islamophobic phenomenon. Robert Spencer, I appreciate so much your clarity on this, and also the fact that you are among those, as have I been, they're trying to silence, and we will not be silenced, God willing. Robert, we have to take a short break. We'll be right back with more with the great Robert Spencer of jihadwatch.org right after this. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We are visiting with Robert Spencer, a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy and a fabulous contributor to this program. He is the author, as I mentioned, of more books than I can count, and certainly more than I can remember the names of. And Robert, I want you to mention one that you recently published with the Center for Security Policy Press that's directly relevant to the topic we were just discussing.
Yeah, it's called Islamophobia and the Threat to Free Speech. And it came out from Center for Security Policy Press in 2021. It is a survey of how the term Islamophobia was used, particularly in the first decade after 9/11, to silence and discredit, demonize, and destroy those who were speaking honestly about the ideological roots of the threat, and how also the use of the term was a kind of dry run for what is being done in a much larger way against pretty much all the critics of the Biden administration at this point, being branded right-wing extremists and so on, and silenced accordingly.
This is no exaggeration, folks. We've seen not only evidence of the canceling of people, including folks like Robert Spencer and yours truly, we've seen the institutionalizing of it. These disinformation operations and truth ministries, they're not quite calling it that yet, but they keep reformulating and repackaging what they're doing. And we've seen, of course, the Twitter files making clear that this has been an actual direct activity of the United States government under the Biden administration to control information, to punish those that enunciate things that they don't find acceptable. And it must be stopped. This is completely contrary to our constitutional freedoms, to say nothing of our survival as a nation. If people like Robert Spencer, with his warnings about the enemy within, especially, are not heard and not heeded as well. Robert, I hope that won't be the case. You have, as I mentioned, Robert, been doing really important work at jihadwatch.org on this whole issue of the left. You call it the left column, where you monitor this sort of thing. Talk a little bit about this spectacular response, shall we say, to the endorsement of transgenderism and its agenda by Anheuser-Busch, specifically in connection with one of their most famous products, Bud Light.
It's finally some good news, Frank. Anheuser-Busch has been in a tailspin for the last now 6 weeks since the beginning of April, when Dylan Mulvaney, the most famous transgender person probably on the planet, announced that he was endorsing Bud Light and did a little video of himself in a bubble bath with Bud Light all around him. And there was a Bud Light can with his face on it. And immediately people started to stop drinking Bud Light because patriots are tired of being forced to accept this enforced insanity, this madness of having to believe that men are women and women are men and they can change at will from one to the other. And the sales of Bud Light have been down over 25% ever since then. The other brands now that Anheuser-Busch puts out are suffering from also downturns. There seems to be no sign of it letting up because Anheuser-Busch is in a very tough position. See, there's a Soros-funded organization, the Human Rights Campaign, that has been essentially strong-arming corporations into accepting the left's agenda by giving them this equity score. And so if they have transgender bathrooms and all various other things they got to tick off on the list, then they get a high score. But if they get a low score, then they're going to be looking at boycotts and attacks in the media and so on. And the corporations are cowardly. They just want to sell stuff. So they go along with all this and become woke. But now, for the very first time, Anheuser-Busch is seeing that there's also a price for going woke. And we can only hope this will keep up and that maybe the Bud Light will die altogether. That would be a great boon for America at this point.
Indeed it would. And it's just the popular response to what's being done here. And I think it's commendable and hopefully a really necessary corrective. Robert, let me just ask, I'm launching right now a campaign against the use of the term woke. It's become, you know, sort of the universal way of describing this agenda, the so-called diversity, inclusiveness, equity. It's Marxism. It's Marxism inside our country and the conformity of these corporations. And I don't disagree with you. They're in the midst of a shakedown by the radical left, by the Marxists. And we need to do everything we can through these kinds of public responses to say, no, it won't be cost-free, at least to you, if you do that. You will find yourself alienating your clientele. But as a serious student of what the left is doing, Robert, as is, of course, the guy that we both admire and work with, David Horowitz, what is the state of the Marxist takedown of our country, evidenced by this institutionalization by the Biden team of the so-called DEI agenda?
Well, it is all in place. Every corporation dances to this tune. And so it looks as if their victory is total. The first indication that it isn't is the boycott of Bud Light. And somebody actually remarked to me, this is not a boycott. This is an abandonment. Nobody's going to go back to Bud Light. Bud Light actually, they've issued several statements, and none of them have been adequate because they don't want to say what they have to say, that they apologize and they're repudiating the trans madness. And failing that, nobody's going to go get any closer to Bud Light than they have been in the last few weeks. So it seemed as
putting it to their lips, I hope, at the very least. Robert, we have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. Thank you very much for this update on two very important stories, the Muslim Brotherhood's penetration and influence operations inside our government, and popular response rejecting the Marxist agenda, which is on the march, folks. Make no mistake about it, brought to you by the same people who are embracing the Muslim Brotherhood. God bless you, my friend. Robert Spencer, always welcome here. Come back soon. I hope the rest of you will do the same again for the next edition of Securing America, and that you will, in the meantime, go forth and multiply.